Thank you all for coming. We almost have kind of a system. It's like when I went to public school in John Wilson Junior High School. When I went to high school, I went from 7:30 in the morning till 12:30 because it was like split sessions. The class is almost like that. It's almost like half the students come one week and half the students come the next week. But everyone's following on the videos, and I see that. I'm glad that Rati Krishna is helping me with that, because also it's a good review. Even after you finish, you can take out the book and study more deeply. Look at me. I wrote the book. I wrote the book, Waves of Devotion. I spent so much time. But when I prepare for this class, I'm studying so much just to try to understand the points deeper and deeper. Prabhupada called the Nectar of Devotion, I think, a basic handbook of Krishna consciousness. So, come on in, Brent. You see, they saved a seat for you up in front. Somehow. So we're going to review, and again, there's a lot of subject matter. I'm really going to try to cover the main points. And, you know, you can't cover every verse, every point, but I think I'm going to give you a framework whereby you can understand any section of the Nectar of Devotion and go even further. But let's do our kind of review before you put it up, Rati. Who can say what the objective of the book is? The objective of the book. Matthew?
Krishna.
Krishna, yes. Can you say anything about Krishna?
Personally or in general?
According to the text. As you remember, the beginning of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there is six verses. I always like to go over and put things in context rather than just go like this. But you actually learn something, and sometimes to repeat things. You like that, Gail? Okay. The first six verses of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu are covered in the first six verses of the Nectar of Devotion. And the first verse defines the objective. Remember, a book has a mangala charanam. It evokes auspiciousness by defining the objective, offering obeisances generally to the Supreme Lord, the spiritual master, and the Vaishnavas, and then offers benedictions. So, Akila Rasamrita Murti, that's the first line of that. Akila, can anybody say what Akila means? Complete. Murti? The embodiment of form. Akila Rasamrita. What's that? Of eternal love, yes. Or Rasamrita also. Amrita means not death. But what gives you not death?
Nectar.
Elixir. So it's the complete embodiment of our eternal love or relationship for Krishna. And what Krishna means is when God is himself, when God is at home, when the full manifestation of the Supreme Lord is there. I always give the example, you see someone in the distance, they're a stranger, you may have a book about them, but you don't know them until you love them, and when you love them, what do you find out about them? what they like, and you find out also that they're a friend or they're a lover or whatever the relationship is. That's who you are. Your identity is your relationships. Who you are, if you take away everything, what are you? If you're not a friend, if you're not a lover, if you're not a parent, if you're not a, you know, what are you? What you are is your relationships. And God is the embodiment of all relationships. Okay, I really feel we need some good stories today just to keep people going. But I remember when I was in college, one time I gave a class at Professor Bryan's class in Rutgers. And I got up and there were 300 students. I wanted to break the ice. So I said, can anybody guess what I studied in college? And they all raised hands. And I said, aeronautics. I was taking up space. So, and actually speaking, that's what most of us done in college. We took up space. We marched on Washington several times. We were able to close down the school. One year we didn't even have the spring semester. We got credit for it. Whoa, the 60s, what a generation. So somehow or other, I got into Krishna consciousness. And when I got into Krishna consciousness, I kind of lost my desire to kind of go out, I remember. And then one of my friends, who I met devotees with in 1970 in California, he was a draft dodger. So he had to come back and face the parole board or something like that. So he, that'll be like probably 5 or 10 minutes. He had, what? Yeah, they're just coming out. But Jai Giridhari is going to challenge all the karate people and not go out there with his legs, Bruce Lee, knock them all out. They'll all be quiet. So you want to hear the story?
Yes.
So my friend comes back and he gives me a Krishna book. And I begin to read about Krishna. And at the same time, what was I really studying in college? Can anybody guess? That doesn't know. Otherwise, if you don't know, what was I studying in college? Take a guess.
Philosophy.
You know that.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that? You got it right. But I was still taking up space. That was my minor philosophy. My major was taking up space. But philosophy, and we had a definition of God. And what was the definition of God? The definition of God was that being of which no greater can be conceived. That was the definition of God. So when I started to read Krishna book, the pastimes of Krishna, then what do you read? You read about this being who everything is within this being. He's consciousness, which is inclusive of everything. But he doesn't have the defect of impersonality. He's beautiful, he has friends, he has all types of perfect relationships. But at the same time, he's pervading everything at the same time. He has inconceivable potency. And when I read this and I was thinking about it, I said, yes. This must be God, because I can't conceive of anything greater than this. That God does not lack love, God does not lack beauty, he doesn't lack relationship, he doesn't lack friendship, and he doesn't lack immanence. He's pervading everything. And if you read Prabhupada's translation of the 10th canto, and he has the pastimes of Krishna. So this is the basic conception, Akhila Rasamrita Murti, that we're gonna We're going to read about the absolute reality, who rasa vai saha, in the ultimate manifestation. And this is from the Upanishads. Rasa Vaisa, he is love. He is complete manifestation. And Prabhupada gives this simple example to actually show this, of a high court judge who has a very high position, but there's very little of himself which is revealed. But when he comes home, then he can have friendship. Friendship is among equals. Romance, parental feelings. So this is the conception. And therefore, the highest God to be the supreme personality can't manifest the supreme position. Because if God, once you manifest immanence or majesty, most of yourself has to be covered. You can't be friends. You can't be. So it's a very beautiful conception of God. And also, as we read in the definition of bhakti, it's to Krishna. Krishna is not a limited term either. It's just like a person can have many, many manifestations. Even yourself, you're many things. You may be a boss, you may be a friend, you may be a lover, you may be a child, you're different things. So God can manifest in many ways, but the complete manifestation is the embodiment of all love, and that's Krishna. Okay, so I'd like to go over the objective. Any questions on that? Okay, and then the definition. Right? Maybe I even get up here, I think, when I do my... I'm in a joking mood today, so forgive me. When I do my Jimmy Swaggart prancing around the stage. So the definition, this is the core, Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakta Uttama, the topmost devotion is... Shilanam are activities that follow Krishna. That's what it pleases. When you want to please someone, when you love someone, you follow their desire. And Krishna's desire comes in the lineage of teachers, but it has to be anukulyena, with the intention to please Krishna. And then without any extraneous desires and not covered by personal speculation or fruitive activities. And what I did last time, I should mention one other thing. This bhakti in the heart, shilanam, it has two ways. One is called, you don't have to chase the roop. The activities, I'll even write it, why not? But I got to... Bhakti is chasta, means activities. It has the form of activities, chasta roop, and bhava roop. And also it has the form of your sentiments or your emotions. So bhakti is both. It's the activities, pure devotional service, the activities you perform, and it's also the mood of love. Now, I asked you last time to pick a person that you know that exemplifies the definition of pure devotional service. Really, what does it mean? It means this consciousness of love. I want to please. It's so different from ego, which means I want to be pleased. This is the definition of absolute pure love. And it's love that's reposed to the highest extent, because it's love for everything, because it's love for God. So I asked you to think of a person that exemplifies this. Remember, different people said different things, and I asked them not to name anyone who is a guru or a sannyasi or anything like this, because then you'll have to mention me because I'm standing up here, and you'll be intimidated. So to keep it neutral, so I asked you to mention someone and what you think. Now I'll ask you to do something else. Why, according to this definition, does the person exemplify this definition? Anyone want to volunteer who they chose? Bryn, who did you choose?
I said Vishwambar.
Vishwambar. Well, why do you feel he exemplifies this? You just feel it. You feel his love. He's for Krishna. Anybody else? Kishori, who?
You were the only person.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else have a better choice? Mother Kalini.
And I think because she's so humble and has such like great humility, and like she's just like such an unassuming person.
Yeah, she's not. Yeah, she doesn't have selfish desires. Such a nice example. Unfortunately, she may not be here so much longer because she has stage 4 cancer. Twice she's got treated for it. Now it's in remission, but we'll see. Yeah.
Jayananda.
Yes.
Yeah. He was constantly, like, his whole activity, his whole day was really packed.
With devotion.
With activity. But every single activity was something to do with the temple.
Yeah. Actually, he mentioned a person named Jayananda. Let me tell about Jayananda. That would be a great example, because when I first came to Krishna consciousness, I met him. And at the early days, he was older than the other people, and he wasn't a hippie. So he was a rare soul at that time. And when Prabhupada would come, Prabhupada always asked, "Where's Jayananda?" And he was always doing service. In fact, the Rath Yatra Fest we have on Fifth Avenue, he's the one that did that. He's the one that established that. I was there in Vrindavan when Prabhupada came to leave the world. I remember I got woken up and said, "Prabhupada's coming, and he's coming to leave the world." And we went into Prabhupada's room. There weren't that many people in Vrindavan at that time. And then Prabhupada, he said, "Yes, I've come to leave the world." But he said, "What is death but just a change of body?" And then Prabhupada quoted from Bhagavad Gita, "Janma karma, dehenos." What is that verse? What? Dehano smin yata dehe komaran yovanam jara tata dehantara praptir. As the embodied soul passes from childhood to boyhood to youth to old age, similarly he'll take self-realized soul is not wilderness. So Prabhupada came to tell. And if one has to leave, let him come to Vrindavan. Everything is there, the Jamuna, the white sands of Ramanreti. And then Prabhupada started to talk about Jayananda, because he had passed away before Prabhupada of cancer. And Prabhupada just started to talk about him, saying, "He helped me so much, he helped me so much." The nectar of devotion. In fact, at the very beginning of the nectar of devotion, you got that? This is interesting. Prabhupada says, Yes. I beg to offer my sincere thanks to all my friends and disciples who are helping me to push forward the Krishna consciousness movement in Western countries. And I beg to acknowledge with thanks the contributions made by my beloved disciple, Sriman Jayananda Brahmachari. And when he passed away, Prabhupada said, you put him on the Vaishnav calendar with all the other great teachers. He's the only one that was ever done. And he really exemplified this because his whole life was guided by what is the desire of Krishna as comes from my guru. That's all his life was completely guided. Nothing was coming out of any selfish desire. It was all how I can please. And I was so impressed when I first came to the temple. Somehow the class is going in a particular way. I'll get back to the... I just feel like somehow or other is the way this class is going today. But when I first came to the temple, I was looking for a place to stay in San Francisco. I was visiting there, and I was calling up so many people. Where can we stay? Any place? No one had a place for us. And someone said, you could stay in the parking lot across from my house in a car. So I was in a car, and with four friends, we went in the parking lot. And it happened to be in the back of... It was a big parking lot, but the store of the temple, small storefront, faced the parking lot. And then I was shocked. You know, there were the devotees. Because I had gone to a Chinese restaurant in San Francisco, which me and my friends picked. You have to be a real New Yorker to understand this, not visiting. We picked that restaurant because it was famous for the waiter insulting the patrons. Okay. You get it. What? But anyway, I got out of the restaurant and the devotees were chanting. And then I went to this parking lot and the back, and there was, I looked in the window and there's smoke and I said, oh. I thought everyone's in the city is into this. And then the next day, the next morning, I see this big man working on a car. You know, and it was this Jayananda. And even though he was the president, it was all about service, whatever it was. So it's a good example. Yeah, it's... And Krishnanu Shilanam, activities which follow the desire of Krishna, which are intended to follow the desire of Krishna without any other extraneous desires. Generally, a person that you'll pick, they generally have surrendered to Krishna through a representative of Krishna. And therefore, their whole life is guided what their mind thinks in that way. What, when you have love, how does your mind work? What pleases my beloved? Think of someone maybe in your life that loves you, maybe a mother or a father or a friend. If they really love you, then what are they thinking? What do you want? What pleases you? So that's what bhakti is. But it's a feeling, a spiritual feeling that encompasses everything. Okay. And then we went over the definition of sadhana bhakti. Right? We want to get this feeling in our heart. We went over the definition. And what is the definition? I'll stand up again. What is the definition of sadhana? It's executed with the senses, sadhya bhav, to get the goal of bhava. So what is sadhana? What is practice? It's executed with the senses for a goal of love. And it's something that's so natural. It's something that's always there. Somehow or within your heart, there's this this particle of love. It's just like a child has this walking capacity. It's there within the child, right? You don't, how does a child learn to walk? He just kind of got to do it. So how do you get bhakti in your heart? How do you get love in your heart? You kind of just got to do it. You just got to do it. And that's how you do it. You practice it. And it brings that on. And there are three really main practices, really. Chanting. The main expression of love. And you'll see this in your own life. If you ever have some love, even if it's an infatuation, what is the main symptom? The main symptom is its express. What is kirtan? Kirtan is when the bhava in the heart, the feelings in the heart, are expressed through the discipline of music. So it's kirtan, hearing, remembering. Then there's nine processes that are mentioned, which we'll study later on. There's Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam. What does Padasevanam mean? Very humble service. You may just sweep a room. Just humble service. Padasevanam, Archanam, you can worship the deity. Vandanam, you can offer prayers. There's so many processes like that. And then Rupa Goswami expands them to 64. And we'll go over the different ways which will be discussed. Okay, so that's the... And then the essence of sadhana bhakti. What's the very essence? Always remember Krishna and never forget him. All the rules and preparation... prohibitions mentioned in the Shastra are servants of these two principles. So this is the real goal. What is the practice? The practice is somehow putting our consciousness on God one way or another. And it describes that the acharya or the teacher, his expertise is finding the ways and means to do that. And because of this natural relationship, love comes out of the heart when you do it. And I gave the example of a little child is born, this relationship with the mother naturally, and naturally the love comes out of both of them because they have a relationship. So we have an eternal relationship with God, and when we focus the consciousness, I also gave the concept of everything has a potency, and objects and acts of devotion have a bhakti shastri, bhakti shakti. When you focus it on it, that love comes out. So the essence is this remembrance, and all the rules that one does and all the regulations one does is simply for this purpose. So we follow rules and regulations because it's a way to take us off the just following our impulses and fixing the mind, but the goal is fixing the mind. And that's the essence. I'll give you an example. I'm gonna share something else here now. Just... my inspiration today moves that way. And in another book, which we're all going to be studying next year, hopefully, called Nectar of Instruction, I'm so enlivened giving this course that I'm going to do something every year, maybe not 9 weeks either, but... it says that one of the things that destroy bhakti is a word called niyama, right? Niyama agraha. So in the Sanskrit, It can be two things. It can be niyama, agraha. There's a Sanskrit rule where you combine two short A's, they become a longer A. Or it can be, I know you in the back can't see there, but, or it can be niyama, agraha. And you'll get the same word. Because a short A and a long A equal to long A and two short A's. So this means too much affinity for the rules. And this means, agraha means too little affinity for the rules. So they both destroy bhakti. Because the essence is to remember Krishna. So if you don't follow the rules strictly, you won't remember Krishna. Because that's what the rules are for. But you can also follow them. You get too much into the rules, it won't help you remember Krishna. And one example is, one of the principal devotional services called Ekadasi. The 11th day after the new and full moon, there's a fasting day. And the idea is, if you reduce your bodily needs, you can remember Krishna. So the strictest standard of doing it is the day before you only eat one meal. Then the next day, you don't take any food or water. And then you stay up all night and don't sleep. And then only eat one meal the next day. And there are people that do this. And why do they do it? To remember Krishna. I asked Pradyumna, who lived in, he's Prabhupada's Sanskrit Pandit, and he lived in India with all these great people, and he lived with some of these sadhus that did this. I said, well, how did they do that? He said, well, it's like a muscle. You exercise the muscle. You know, they just exercise. But what happens is you're so attached to the rule, but you have a vata constitution. And if you don't eat, you become so disturbed that you can't think of Krishna. But you're going to follow the rule. See, the principle is the remembrance of Krishna. This is the essence, to remember Krishna. I'll give you another example. I knew this really very evolved sadhu. And he would follow something called Chaturmasya. Does anybody know what Chaturmasya is? Clarissa? Go ahead. That's actually, that's one thing that people do. But generally it means in the rainy season in India, it rains for 4 months from July basically through October. In the rainy season, then, and in our line, Prabhupada said in 1 month, the minimum thing is in 1 month you don't take milk. Then one, you don't take yogurt. Then one, you don't take any greens, not even broccoli or salads. And 1 month, you somehow, I don't know, Urdal. It's just that they have this different fast. But there's actually a very, very strict fast. And I know people in the Gaudiya Math, that was Bhakti Siddhanta, Prabhupada's guru's mission, that they follow it real strictly. There's only certain vegetables you can eat and certain things you can do. And you don't shave for the month. And they all follow it very, very strictly. And I knew this sadhu that followed it for 60 years. Why? Because it helped him to remember Krishna. You reduce your bodily, it's like 4 months where you're increasing your chanting, you're meditating. And then he went to a place called Jayapur, where they have the original deities of Vrindavan called Radha Govinda, which are the deities of Rupa Goswami. And it was during Chaturmasya. And then he went to the altar, and the priest offered him some maha prasada from Radha Govinda that had some vegetable that he didn't eat during Chaturmasya for 40 years. And he told me, I thought about it and I took it. I said, why did you take it? He said, I thought the principle of honoring Rupa Goswami was higher than the fast. So it's so, isn't it too much? This is the principle of bhakti. Too little affinity, no good. You just follow your whims. Too much, no good. So that's the essence. Remember Krishna of sadhana bhakti. Okay, and then they came to a conclusion. O Narada, all activities prescribed in the scriptures with the Lord as the object of love are called vaidhi bhakti. By this performance of bhakti, one attains prema. Remember we had sadhana bhakti had two divisions, depending on where the inspiration was. One inspiration is basically understanding I should do it because it's prescribed in the Shastra, and the other is your natural proclivity and spontaneity to do it. So right now we're going to be in the section of vaidhi bhakti, to that we follow certain principles to get devotion because they're prescribed in the shastras, and this is the result of it. When you follow them, but intelligently, when you follow them, you attain prema bhakti. And what is prema bhakti? Prema bhakti is the goal. This is what we want. It's love that's just, it's something like this. I'm going to say it in another way. First, you have to understand God and God's, what is God? What's the nature of God? Then you have to understand what is bhakti, how to realize God. And what is the result of realizing God? When you actually realize God by the practice of devotion, when you actually realize, mean you begin to experience God, it's called prema or love. Because love is the attraction between two entities who have a relationship. It's an energy. And that energy in bhakti is considered an existential energy. You actually become awakened and you actually feel God everywhere and this love comes out of your heart. That's the goal of life. And can there be any other goal? I'm going to tell a joke now, Lisa, but it's good to see you, okay? Kastubha is not here, but Kastubha's guru was probably the main assistant to Prabhupada. And he was very powerful. Practically everything that was done in ISKCON, from getting the land in Mayapur to the, you know, everything, he was like at the forefront of everything. So about 25, 30 years ago, when my friend Bhuri John Prabhu and I assisted him, we established in ISKCON this Vrindavan Institute of Higher Education, the first one, and we were getting some of these people to teach. So we gave him a class, and he was teaching the Nectar of Devotion. So he would give these tests where there were like so many questions. And like the students would like go in there like, and they'd be like answering the questions. And he'd be walking outside. He said, you know, when I went to school, I didn't like it, but now I kind of like it. And then when someone would come in, he would go like this, you're late, you're losing points. Okay. So now the eligibility for, how do you get bhakti? How do you become eligible for bhakti? Okay, so you got that? So Prabhupada writes, out of account of his association with Mahatmas or great souls, 100% in devotional service of the Lord, one may attain a little bit of attraction for Krishna. So how do you get it? Somehow it's mercy. Read the next verse. It's one of my favorite verses. So how do you become eligible to execute bhakti? somehow or another. And then Prabhupada quoted this verse. And it's one of my favorite verses. Megan, do you know this verse? Ramanda Brahmate Konya Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai Bhakti. You know it. Okay. We'll test you more. Brahmanda Brahmate. Brahmate means to go around. Brahmanda means the universes. You see, a Brahmin means, you heard the term Brahmin? Brahmana actually means broad-minded. The opposite of Brahmana is Kripana. It's a miser. So Brahmin means broad-minded. What does it mean? It's kind of like this. If you have a bad stomach, if you're not broad-minded, you'll see the beginning of the meal and the end of the meal and your enjoyment. You won't see what happens after the meal. See, like a child, right? A child's not broad-minded. They'll do so many things because they can't see beyond their immediate enjoyment. So this is trying to extend that. Brahmanda Brahmate, it explains that you've been wandering in universe to universe, species of life to species of life. This is the perspective of someone who's broad-minded. Species of life to till Konya Bhagavan Jeev, till you. What are you? You're a jiva. A jiva means you're a little soul. You become fortunate. And what's your fortune? Prasadhe, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, by the Bhakti Lata Beach. Lata means the vine of bhakti, the seed. You get the seed of devotion. And what is the seed of devotion? It's this faith or trust in my ultimate benefit is guiding my life to please God. That's a faith. My faith is that my happiness will be not when I put myself in the middle and try to control everything according to my desires, but that I actually serve. I serve truth. I serve this desire. I'm in harmony with the universe. And how do you become in harmony with something? By one desire. So there's a universal desire. And when you actually follow that, it's just the example of the hand and the body. If the body represents the universe, when everything in the body, all parts of the body are following the desire of the body, and it works as this happiness. So to get that trust in this, that's mercy. And that's where it all starts. Somehow or other. It doesn't mean that I'm a Brahmin, it starts. We're going to read about this. It doesn't mean that I'm very austere, it starts. Somehow or other, you get that seed of devotion in your heart. It's a faith. It's a trust. And I can just tell in my own life, I remember God wasn't a very big part of my life, but for my bar mitzvah, I had to go to Hebrew school. I hated it, absolutely, after school. But sometimes they would chant some prayers. And somehow, I hated Hebrew school, but a little taste, but nothing. And then somehow or other, I met Prabhupada, I met the devotees, and that taste, that faith, that trust was somehow put into my heart. And this says it's momentous. It's momentous because since time immemorial, you're wandering around. Then all of a sudden, this is planted in the heart. This Bhakti Lata Beej. It's an idea, and it's an experience. It's both. It's an idea. It's a conception that this is good, serving Krishna, serving God. This is good. And we said before, if you look really deeply at the people you admire, they're the people of sacrifice and love. Really. Not the people that situate themselves in the center and are trying to get power to control everything. But somehow or other, that comes into the heart. And I can say for myself, the point I was making, it's both a idea, this is good, but it's based on the experience that it's good. So somehow or other you get the experience. All of a sudden I'm doing kirtan. Somehow or other I'm in a kirtan, and wow, this coming out of the heart, this glorification. When this comes out of the heart, this calling, this selflessness, this love, that's a great feeling. Better than lust and anger and greed coming out of the heart. When love comes out of the heart, that's an incredible feeling. And then, I'm not sure, does any, you know where that verse is? Adau Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha. It's someplace coming up, but I'll explain it now. There's this verse, it says, Adau Shraddha. It first begins with some faith, some trust. Then, and what's the trust? Hey, wait. And I think that's what the Bhakti Center is. It wants to give people the opportunity to actually appreciate Krishna consciousness by making a presentation of it that doesn't pose obstacles to appreciating it, by communicating it properly, by representing it properly somehow to the people in the first world. I know I've been doing this for so many years. I know so many years. We had such a beautiful thing, but the communication of it wasn't very effective. And then what happens? Adau Shraddha, you get appreciation, Tata Sadhu Sangha. And then by that appreciation, you see, oh, it's so good. I like I like to be with the people that do it. And then if that increases, Adau Shraddha, Tata Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, it's so good that I'll adopt some of the practices. And then by that, and then there's a long stage, it's called Anartana Vritti. It's so good that Anartha, Artha means value, Anartha, that which has no value to this goal of filling my heart with love, I start to give up naturally. Then Nishta, I become fixed. Then ruchi, then there's taste. Then asakti, addiction. And then the voice in the heart, and this is what you appreciate of someone when they actually become elevated in spiritual life. This is the heavy part. The next verses become very encouraging, actually. But when that voice becomes so consuming, which is like a saint, right? This is what I want. Then, nitya siddhasya bhavasya, real devotion, real bhakti, real love, God's energy comes into your heart. But this is the basic thing. Prabhupada writes, confirmed by Lord Chaitanya, fortunate persons, by the mercy, or bona fides, and will get the seed of devotion. Are there any questions so far? Clarissa? What's that?
It's mentioned before that like nobody can come to the service without previous connection to it.
Yeah.
So, this is probably lacking in thinking, but does that mean that like somebody first comes to devotional service, and I'm thinking of like back to Alex or something, and they're just like way up there on the rung, and they're like past Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha, and they're just like past
What?
It's like Nishtha. It's not like, you know,
Well, look, where you end off, then you begin. Where you end off in your previous life, you begin. But when it says no one can come to Krishna consciousness, it means when you actually, pure devotional service, where you actually, you know, understand and want to commit yourself, you know, just not, it's not just a social thing, but it's your spiritual path and you want to commit yourself, you know, that starts, you know, with some previous connection. But how it ultimately begins, that's how it ultimately begins. Somehow or other, some mercy. It's called agyata sukriti. You don't even know. Somehow or other, walking by Union Square, and a little child gets the maracas. So somehow it begins. Okay, now... next verse. So this is actually for Vaidhi Bhakti, you know, to really get faith in following the teachings. Now this is very, very interesting. It says, a person who has developed faith in serving by the impressions from previous association with devotees, who's not too attached to material objects, and who is not too detached, is qualified. Not too attached, not too detached. Because if you're too detached, you'll be more attracted to austerities and gyan. You'll be attracted to the path of gyan. If you're too detached, you'll come in and you'll see people singing and dancing and taking prasadam, and you won't be attracted. You're too detached. Then you'll tend to become a jnani. And if you're too attached, then you'll want to take up karma. You'll want to execute religion, not to get love, but to get something for yourself. It's a very interesting verse. Not too detached, not too attached. But bhakti means... if you're devoid of extreme attachment... See, if you have extreme attachment, you'll do karma. Why would you want pure devotional service? Where you actually have to surrender to God. And again, this term surrender, as Sathari said, is impregnated with history. Surrender doesn't mean forced. It means inspired. You want to love. You want to take shelter. You want to serve. So... not too attached, not too detached. But by the power of a devotee, even someone extremely attached can get bhakti. But general principle is that. And what's beautiful about here is, in bhakti, wherever you are, you start. Because it's the path of dedication. So wherever you are, you start. Now, this next verse is really beautiful, and it's in the commentary. And let's follow, because it's very, very interesting. Having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce sense enjoyment, my devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activity. So it's such a beautiful verse. Wherever you are, you start. And when you start, And there's another book I'm reading. It says, of course, I always make this point because bhakti is not renunciation. It's dedication. So I always want to make the point that there's enjoyment in Krishna consciousness, there's sense gratification, but we don't live for it. That's not our goal. We don't live to enjoy. We enjoy to live. We don't live to eat. We eat to live. We eat to live. We enjoy to live. But it's not a process of guilt. Wherever you are, you can start in bhakti. That's the pure nature of bhakti. Wherever you are, you start. And the qualification is having the right objective and goal. Even if you can't give up things, to actually know and hear and embrace, you know, what is the goal? Selfishness is not the goal. Selflessness is the goal. And that consciousness of selflessness is the goal. And then wherever you are, and your activities may be the same as someone outside, the only difference is your objective is different. Your understanding is different. And therefore your destination will be different. How are we doing? You'll still come back next week? Mangal Arti?
Two quick questions.
Yeah.
One is,
yeah.
Are we hearing about the sensory contact and the activity?
Yeah.
Or is it the experience of that sensory experience is being for me and for my senses as opposed to Krishna? And then the second piece,
yeah. Okay, well, the first question is basically bhakti is utility. It's how you use things. Like Arjuna, it's not that he didn't fight, and it's not that he wasn't a warrior and liked to fight. It was the consciousness behind it. So, of course, in bhakti, it's not a focus on detachment. It's a focus on dedication. And I gave the example how you... You know, we eat nice prasadam. It's just like if there's a birthday, right? And you love someone. Let's say the teacher's birthday and there's a big feast, right? Your enjoyment is part of the honor. Right? You're eating food, you're tasting things. It's part of the honor. If everyone went and... So yes, there's a certain connection in that way. And your second question was?
What does repenting look like for a Vaishnava?
Repenting. You know, in the initiation process, and I have to mention too that what initiation is, it's the beginning of a process. It's not the completion of a process. And one of the things is tapa. The first thing is tapa. There's five things. First is tapa. Tapa means a regret of your identity, your consciousness, like that. You have to have a healthy regret in bhakti. It's just a conscience, that's all. That I'm living my life just selfishly and it's not right. I want to live my life more selflessly. It's a conscience. We should have a conscience for the right things. Right? Everybody has a conscience. You have some parameters. So this sets the parameters a little bit higher. Right? Because it sets the parameters in terms of a change of identity from I am the center to I am the servant of the center. So it's just a gradation. as you, you know, you have a higher standard of selflessness. It's very serious. This is called Uttama Bhakti, right? It's the topmost bhakti. You want to come to the topmost bhakti, there's a healthy conscience about it, right? But at the same sense, what it says here is you should remain happy. So I think what it is more something like this. It's not so much feeling bad about the mistakes you make. It's feeling bad about not progressing towards the goal. Understanding, right, that everyone's going to start with a certain level of attachment and activities, etc. So wherever you are, there's a goal and a path. And if you're not sincerely moving in that direction, right, then that's the... Well, here it says you're happy. You remain happy, and I guess the happiness is I'm moving forward towards Krishna, and then there's a natural remorse that my activities are not yet up to that standard. I think it's a very, very natural thing. There's a goal, and we know what the goal is. We face what the goal is, right? This is the standard. Right? I'm moving towards the standard. I'm engaging in devotion. I feel happy. But hey, it's a natural humility, though. Right? But actually, what I'm doing is not yet up that standard. So it's a very, I think you're moving forward towards the goal sincerely, but you're not at the goal. You're happy serving Krishna, moving forward towards it. But you realistically are looking at your life and this is not yet the service to Krishna. You know, the highest devotees, it's like when you have a clean glass of water, every speck of dirt can be seen. So actually, the more advanced people are, the more repentive they are. And there's a famous story of Raghunath Das Goswami. And he was exceptionally renounced. He was exceptionally renounced. The stories of his renunciation. And he was so pure that he would feel it. He would see it. But, yeah, I think that's how I would analyze that verse. Yes.
Yeah. My understanding and elaborate. Often what's said is whatever you do for Krishna, and this is bhakti.
Yeah.
And my understanding is that actually bhakti is not offering your conditioned activities is not bhakti.
What's that?
Offering your conditioned activities is not bhakti.
What's that?
Can you elaborate on this?
You know what I think we're going to do? We'll take a 10-minute break now, and then I'll elaborate on that, and then we'll finish it. I think we need kind of a break right now, okay? And I'll discuss that first thing. Take a 10-minute break, and we'll start again at 4:30, and then we have only an hour. Okay? We'll all begin again. I'll just tell the people in the hallway that it's beginning. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Okay, we have another hour. I want your attention. We're going to plow through the rest of it. But I just want to give a little bit of a summary now again. That I just love the analogy that there's a universal body and we're part of something greater than ourselves that we're connected to. I gave the example sometimes like a symphony orchestra. There's a harmony that creates beauty, it creates love, and when people participate in that, they participate in the beauty and love. If someone is selfish and has their, like if you throw a pebble in a pond, it makes concentric circles. If you throw pebbles at different centers, it causes conflict. So there's a center, and it's called Ishvara. Vara means circle, actually, and Ish means the center of the circle. Everything's connected to the center. So everything's connected to something greater, and that's called God. It's called Krishna. And just like the body is a unit, its happiness is when the parts of the body follow the will of the body and not act independent of the body. And when that happens, sometimes I know kind of this catchwords in yoga teaching sometimes of people that are not so, you got to let go, you got to let go. But what does let go mean? Let go means let go of your resistance, right? And follow the truth. So look at the hand. Let go, let go, let go. Follow the body. And what happens is when the hand follows the body, all of a sudden the hand has real purpose or meaning because what it is part of the body. And it also gets replenishment. So this is what the bhakti is saying, that to follow that is love. It's our interest. And the first thing to do is to understand that it's our interest. And once you understand that it's our interest, because what happens is when we connect to God in that same way, the nourishment is love, because real service is love. Just like you can give someone a meal, right? But let's say there's no love, but you're just like an oppressed housewife, if there's such a thing. And here, the husband comes home and here's the meal. They get the meal, but how much pleasure do they get from the meal? Why? Because there's no love. So love, that love or that bhakti is the real pleasure. It's the universal principle. We're supposed to be connected to it. What we are is receptacles of that love. And therefore, the path of bhakti means that love and to develop that love. And how do you do it? You have to act on that platform. You have to connect with that desire and want to follow it and get a taste for it. And that's what the bhakti lata bij is. You actually get an understanding and a faith and attraction for it. Because it's actually the most beautiful thing. We want to be happy, but what is happiness? Happiness is love. And it says there, it's something that's always existing. You just have to access it. It's something in your heart. It's something that comes to your heart. So that's the process of bhakti. And then it gave a definition, and then after, well, how do you get it? Well, what is it? Well, when you use your senses, your mind, your body, and words for that. And there's ways to do it. And what's the basic principle of why these activities and practices? Because they help you to think of God and connect with God and actually draw that out of your heart. And that's what bhakti is. And initially, it's done because we don't have that natural, spontaneous love to always think of Krishna. Like any practice, we do it, we follow some prescriptions, we follow some rules, we follow some understanding. And that desire of God and that process of how to do it, that's what sacred text or shastra are. So you get this faith that if I want to progress on the path of love, then I want to follow the will of God, the prescriptions that come in these sacred texts, and the people who live that, embody that, and teach that, I surrender to, because they're carrying that will, because they have that love, so they're carrying the will, that desire. So that's called Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, that you follow to get that, your objectives, I want that. Now, there's three grades of eligibility for Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. You see in this word, adhikari? It means a person who's qualified. So there's uttama adhikari, the most qualified, madhyam adhikari, middle qualification, and Kanishtha Adhikari. He has the least qualification. Qualification for what? For this practice. Right? So the topmost qualification is a person knows those sacred texts and he's fixed. He has faith. He really has faith, trust, that this goal, that I should bring pure love into my heart, and that the directions for how to do that are the shastra, the sacred texts, and that this is the topmost object in worship of love is Krishna, and he knows the shastra, and he can argue on it, and reason, and he understands it perfectly. So that's an uttama adhikari. Now, it's a generic term because it's the topmost qualification for what? For this, to practice. To practice. And that's what you're doing here. You're increasing your adhikari by understanding what is in the sacred text, and by hearing about it, increasing your conviction for it. And I've seen personally, by doing this for so many years, Gail knows I even do it on phone conference twice a week. And Brajaradhe, they listen every week, twice a week. And I know how it works from that hearing and contemplating, because when you hear sacred text and it speaks to you and then you think about it, then you tend to act upon that platform and then you realize it. So this is actually the process. This is why I have this class, because people have some interest in bhakti. What is bhakti? Not only in the interest of bhakti, but I would like to actually have love in my heart as the goal, or at least I want to explore this path a bit and hear about this path a bit. So that's the topmost qualification, Prabhupada said he's very expert in study of the relevant scriptures, an expert in putting forth arguments in terms of those scriptures. He understands perfectly that the goal of life is to attain transcendental loving service of Krishna. And he knows. So this is it. And then the Madhyamadikari, he has that faith, but he's not as expert in terms of the real scriptures and presenting it. But he has firm faith in the objective. And what is the objective? Serving God is good. That's the best thing. And if I can bring this into my heart, this is the highest objective of life. Prema Pumartha Mahan. Artha, value, Mahan. The greatest value is prema. Love. I'm convinced of it. And I want it. See, that's that objective. See, without faith, you can't move any place. You don't move an inch. And the greater your conviction, the stronger you move in a particular direction. I know some people that go to school and they're convinced that this is the best thing and I'm going to get the topmost degree and go out in the world and I'm going to get, you know, my education, and they work hard. And then someone else goes to school and thinks, well, I don't know about this. I mean, like, what's the use of this?
Take up space.
What?
Take up space.
Take up space. So different faith. And then the Kanishtha Adhikari, he has some faith, otherwise he's not Adhikari, he's not qualified. He has some faith, faith in the objective, it's not so strong. And like he also doesn't know the Shastra very. So because his faith is not so strong, he doesn't know it, he becomes confused. Someone can give him other arguments or something, and he generally becomes confused and goes to his teacher and gets his doubts cleared, etc. So this is qualification for... See, the difference is someone may go to the temple and they'll bring a bag of rice and they'll put a bag of rice or some fruit on the altar, and they'll fold their hands like this, and they'll say, oh dear Radha Govinda, please get my son into Harvard. Please get my daughter married. Please do this, please do that. That, you see, they'll get some benefit just by coming to God, but it's not that conviction yet. That's not the goal. The goal is not for me to get something. The goal is to actually love God. And Clarissa, I think that's when it says no one can come to Krishna consciousness unless they have some previous connection. They can't come to that degree. They can't come to that degree. And you see, it's rare. Even if in India, if you'll go, one day you'll visit us in the Krishna Balaram Mandir, and I'm sure you'll sit at least 6 hours every day in the kirtan, knowing you. But when you go, you'll see thousands of people coming into the temple, thousands. And they'll be chanting and dancing wildly, right? But they don't have the idea yet that the goal of life is to develop pure love of Godhead. See, and the bhakti is so beautiful, it doesn't mean I can't be married, I can't have a family, I can't be wealthy, I can't be this, I can't be six, but that's your karma, and that's what you may need to be satisfied, right? But your objective in doing that is I'm satisfied because the goal is to get love of Godhead. So you look in the temple, so many people are coming, but they don't have the idea that the objective is to get love of Godhead. It's to get the blessings of the gods and to get some, you know, blessing or benediction for myself. I actually was the producer of a film on Govardhan Hill. And because it's so interesting out there, when you see hundreds of thousands of people going around this hill, and there's people that do this Dandavat Parikram, where they go, it takes 50 hours. They just go like, you pay their body and then go and go. And there's people that do 108 in each space. There's some people have been out there going around for 7-8 years. There's a lot of interesting things. So I got this filmmaker, which is a friend of mine, who won some award in Hollywood 30 years ago. I got him to make a film. And I don't want to get to the story of the film, but some of the footage is real interesting. They're asking people why they go around. Because we want to get blessings from the gods. I want to get my daughter married. I want to get money. I want to get this. I want to get that. So to come to that point where in your heart comes bhakti, you know, that understanding, no, this is not the goal. The goal is actually to get this love of Godhead. And that doesn't mean renounce from the world. It means changing your heart. So if you want it, you have to practice. And the topmost qualification is someone who actually knows. I'll give you one example. One of the principles, if you understand that, we're not going to go back, but shilinam, the activities, there's activities you do positively, what you do, and there's things which are nivritti, you give up. So one of the things that you don't, one of the things, an important principle of bhakti, is you don't offend people who are dedicated to God. It's called the mad elephant offense. Because what happens is you can make a garden and make a fence and little animals won't go, but the mad elephant will crush your whole garden. So you may make a practical field of bhakti and devotion and cultivate it, but if you criticize sadhu ninda, you know, those people that are dedicating their lives, it can destroy your whole bhakti. So this one godbrother of Prabhupada, he was a scholar, and he wrote one book called The Heart of Krishna. It's a great book. And in it, he went through the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is the stories of Lord Chaitanya, and the Bhagavatam, and told every story and commentary of the effects of offending a Vaishnava. And there's all kinds of stories in the Bhagavatam of what happens, and in Chaitanya Charitamrita of what happens to someone when he does that. And when you read story after story from different angles, and you actually see, then you get strength. Yes, I will follow that. You see, and you become uttama adhika, you become more qualified because you're hearing what the truth is. You have the firm faith in the objective, but when you actually know what the principles are and hear about them repeatedly, you get strength and understanding. I remember from reading that book, because sometimes American culture, it's kind of like this. If I throw the fist and it, Tridana, I forgot to answer your question. I hope you're not angry with me.
I'll stay in extra moment.
What?
I didn't answer the question.
What's that?
I said I'll stay
an extra moment. Okay. We should do that. Yukta Vairagya. What Yukta Vairagya means is it's a principle that a devotee has balanced detachment. And what balanced detachment means is we give up things that cannot be used in Krishna's service. Right? But many things can be used, you know, including, you know, whatever it is, our family, our need to produce children, our you know, so many things can be used in Krishna's service, right? But what we can't use, we give up, right? So with that, that's called balanced detachment, and that's important for bhakti, because bhakti is the heart, and the heart has to be open to love Krishna. So if you just practice vairagya, vairagya is militant detachment. It means no, 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 no. the heart keeps it, the heart becomes restricted in a way where it can't, it's not good for bhakti. So yukta vairagya means that you're practicing detachment because you have to practice detachment, but you're also exercising the heart because you can keep the things, you can keep your attachments and the things you like in Krishna's service, right? Including your affectionate relationships with people and whatever you need for Krishna's service, so you get both. So that's what yukta vairagya is, balanced attachment. Okay, and your question was?
My question?
Yeah.
Okay, well, basically, how is that distinct from bhakti itself and practicing bhakti?
This is going to be discussed later on, but there's different types of bhakti, right? One type of bhakti, or one thing you can do, is called a rope siddha bhakti. You do things you like, and then you offer the results to Krishna. Right? So that's also devotion in one sense. It's part of the item of actually dasya. You have attachments, etc., and then you give the result to Krishna. But ultimate bhakti is something very deep in the heart, where everything you want to do is to please Krishna. But in pleasing Krishna, it's not necessary to please Krishna. You have to renounce things, because some things that we like and do, we can use in Krishna's service. And it can still be bhakti. We don't have to shut it out. I don't like it. I don't like to do it. But if it's service for Krishna, we can do it. For example, theater, right? Someone could like to do theater, and they like to do theater. You know, and it's very much connected with their karma. Now, if they do it for Krishna, it becomes bhakti. People like to sing, right? They like to do music. If they do it for Krishna, it becomes bhakti. But naturally, as you become more and more advanced, like I notice when Ananta sings, it has so much potency because he loves music and he loves to do it, but he's not doing it for himself. One time, I asked, not a question, Professor Brian is a friend of mine since 1981. We go way, way back in Vrindavan. So I sometimes stay at his house. And he had the transcript of conversations with the most learned scholar in Vrindavan. The guy has like equivalent to 9 PhDs from Benares Hindu University. He was so learned. So they asked him, can you serve pizza to Krishna? This is what they ask him. And the reason they ask him is because everyone in ISKCON eats pizza. So they, you know, it's like another group. This will get some criticism now. And, you know, because his answer was beautiful. Whatever you like best, you can offer with the most devotion. It can be pure bhakti. It can be pure bhakti.
So then how is that different from these 64?
What's that?
How is that different from
Because you're doing it for Krishna. And you're not just doing it for your conditioning. You like to paint, but you're painting for Krishna. So it's not that it's just completely unrestricted, but it just happens to conform. Bhakti is dedication. And the things that we like, we can offer with the most devotion. So it's very, very natural in bhakti to take your proclivities and offer it to Krishna. But the way it becomes bhakti, right, is really, ultimately, when you surrender to Krishna completely, you want real pure devotional service, and you surrender to Krishna, and you surrender to Krishna's representative, then you do what pleases him. Just like Arjuna surrendered fully, fully to Krishna, right? And what did Krishna say? You fight. So that becomes pure devotion. he was a warrior. He had to fight. It was his conditioning. But you fight. So the principle is if you surrender, if you take shelter, and then if you're doing it on that principle, then the same thing that's conditioned becomes pure. Because you're no longer doing it. The impetus for the activity is no longer me, 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 me. It's how can I please you, Krishna? And then, you know, your teacher or something will say, you should paint for Krishna. Or let's say Dhyana and Shama, you know, I want you to open this yoga studio. Did they like yoga? They like yoga. Right? It doesn't have to, they have to cut off their appreciation for yoga or something for it to be bhakti. No, but they're completely, it's Krishna's desire. And sometimes Krishna's desire conforms to our own. Then it becomes bhakti. But we should definitely, our mood should be this. You know, what does Krishna want? What you do? The term for gopi, one term for gopi is kinkari. It means what you want, I will do. So that's bhakti. What you want, I will do. And then you do that in bhakti. And then bhakti is not detachment, so you're not constantly having to introspect. Is there a speck of desire or like or thing? You surrender. You surrender to Guru and Krishna. It becomes bhakti. Okay? Thank you for clarifying that. Okay? Okay. Okay. So, okay. Okay, we're going to probably go a little quick now. That's okay? Okay, so you have the three adhikaris, what? For vaidhi, sadhana, bhakti. For how to practice devotion, do what Krishna wants, which is in the Shastra, and you have to know it, and you have to have faith in the objective. Now, further clarification of the neophyte. Okay? How are we doing? Are we all following today?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm trying to... Chatur vidha bhajanti mam jan... This is a famous verse. Megan, don't look. Close your eyes. Turn around. So there's four types of people that come to Krishna. Want wealth, get free from distress, have curiosity, and come out of knowledge. And how they come is because they have some sukriti. Sukriti means pious activity. It means that connection with Krishna. So in their distress, they approach Krishna. In their desires, they approach Krishna. And then and by the association, then they come to pure bhakti eventually. But generally people come, they have motives in the world. That's not Uttama Bhakti. There's the story of Dhruva Maharaj. Do you know that story? Somehow or other, his father had two wives and favored the other wife that wasn't his mother. So then he sat on his father's lap, who was the king, and then the mother, then the other wife objected, and he was a Kshatriya, a warrior, and he felt so insulted that he was a young boy, and he went out to the forest, and he vowed that I will get a kingdom bigger than my father. And then he took the bhakti to do that. He wanted it, so he was praying to God for that. And then by his prayer, Krishna appeared and offered him the pole star, which is also called Dhruvaloka. And it's a planet. He wanted a planet greater than his grandfather, Lord Brahma. So he got this planet. But what happened is, when he had that association with Krishna, he said, I was, compared to the jewel of bhakti in my heart by the association of God, that wealth is like a piece of broken glass. So four types of people, they surrender to Krishna. And because they're pious, because they have that agata sukriti, then in their distress and think they approach Krishna. And then by approaching Krishna, they get purified. And then they come to the platform. And they realize, go ahead, we'll keep on going quickly, Rati. The Gyani is, there are four types. There's want wealth, I'm in distress. In fact, the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is called Vishad Yoga. It's the yoga of dejection. In distress, we try to find some happiness. And if somehow or other you have that connection with devotee, or that'll... But, so there's four, and one is the Gyani, and he's the best. And why is the Gyani the best? Because if he turns to Krishna, Gyani, he's not asking for anything in return. He already knows he's not the body, and he has no false identification with the body, so he can approach basically out of love. So we'll keep on going. We'll go quickly. And okay, we're so far behind today, but I don't like to just cover things for the sake of covering things, but we'll do something here. Let me find where I am. I'm so lost here. So that was the eligibility, and this is how you become ineligible. How can the happiness of bhakti arise in the heart when the witch of desire for enjoyment... It's not even the... It's supposed to be the witch of enjoyment and liberation remain there. And the analogy is when you're haunted or cursed, then you become possessed. So if you become possessed with strong material desire, extreme attachment, and if you become possessed with the desire for liberation, then it's hard to take the bhakti. And especially liberation, because what it's talking about liberation is here, is when you're actually wanting a type of oneness, a type of liberation where there's no distinction between the subject and object of love. There can be no bhakti. If you actually get that desire in my heart, I want to be liberated. Liberation means a negative conception. Like you're so frustrated in the world that you feel that liberation is, I don't want any relationship, you've got that realization that just being selfish just leads to so much distress that you just want to negate it. But if you get that desire strong in your heart, then there can't be bhakti. Because there can be no love. So this rejection of moksha is an important component of bhakti. Because it will block bhakti. Yes.
So when they mention moksha, it's specifically the one of merging.
Right? Yeah.
Not the other four types.
Yeah, we're going to go quickly to that. Yeah, in personal liberation, you have that desire. I want to be, Prabhupada said, to be greater in the material sense or spiritual sense. Just this merging. There's no bhakti. Okay, let's go. We'll go quickly today. And now he's going to quote so many verses. This is famous from Shikshastra. I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor do I desire beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. So it means you don't even care for liberation, because liberation means no more birth. You don't even care for that. This is what bhakti is. Bhakti means I just want Krishna to be pleased. I don't even care. Liberation is also a personal desire. I want to be free from suffering. I want. You have no other desire. Okay, we'll go on. Upon seeing the charming forms of the Lord, smiling and attractive, and hearing pleasing words, the pure devotee almost loses all other consciousness. His senses are freed from all other engagements, and he becomes absorbed in devotional service. Thus, in spite of his unwillingness, he attains liberation without separate endeavor. Next verse. Just read a few. Go ahead. Rati?
That's it.
Is it? My dear Lord, if after taking liberation I have no chance of hearing the glories of your lordship, glories chanted by pure devotees from the core of their hearts in praise of your lotus feet, if I have no chance for this honey of transcendental bliss, then I shall never ask for liberation or this so-called spiritual emancipation. I shall simply always pray unto your lordship that you may give me millions of tongues and millions of ears so that I can constantly chant your glories. So liberation means that. Impersonal liberation means annihilation of all individuality. And actually, it's a minority view in Indian thought. There's six schools of thought. There's six philosophies, basically, that are comprehensive of all schools of Indian philosophy. And I can't get into everything because there's not so much time, and I'm conscious of that. But the general idea is that the eternal individuality of the soul it is the predominating view, except for one or two schools of one of the divisions of philosophy, which is called Advaita Vedanta. But it's popular in America, because one of the first Hindus that came represented Indian spirituality as that. But it's a minority view. And so he's saying, I pray that you may give me millions in tongues and millions of... Rather than annihilate the senses and annihilate the individuality, for bhakti I want more individuality. Okay, I'll put Megan on the spot again, because she's... With Megan, somehow or other, when I met her in India, she had this propensity. She was an actress, and this is kind of poetry. So she requested me to give her one verse a week. So she does that. So it's not that she knows every verse in the world. Okay. Megan, stand up. Turn around. Verse on the holy name. Tunde Tandavani, it's very much like this. This is one of the most beautiful verses. Go ahead.
Tunde Tandavani, Tunde Tandavani, Tunde Tandavani, Tunde Tandavani,
Translation.
I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna produce. When all the name of Krishna is chanted, it appears to dance from the mouth. We then desire many, many mouths. When that name enters the holes of the ears, we then desire many millions of ears. And when the holy name dances in the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the mind, and all senses become aware. I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna produce.
That's Bhakti. Okay, Rati, next one. Go to Hanuman. There's so many verses here, we can't cover them all. Go ahead. Go to Hanuman. This is very famous from Hanuman. Hanuman said, if liberation means that there's an absolute merging with you, I don't want to be liberated because then I can't serve you. My dear Lord, if you like, you can give me salvation from this material existence or the privilege of merging into existence, but I do not wish any of these things. I don't want anything that diminishes my relationship with you as servant to master, even after liberation. Next verse. This is also a famous verse of somehow in one story, some king who was a great devotee became cursed, almost to go to hell. Kind of like that. He was cursed. And so he said a very beautiful thing. Narayana Parasarve Nakutas Chanya Bibhyati Swaga Pavagana Apituliyatidar. One who is Narayana Parayana, one who loves you, right? He doesn't care if he goes to the heavenly planets. He doesn't care if he Pavarga stays here or he goes to hell. He just wants to serve. There's a famous story with Narada Muni, and Krishna had a headache, and Narada said, how can I cure your headache? He said, I want the dust from the feet of my devotees. I want the dust from the feet of my devotee. So they went to every devotee, and they asked for the dust of his feet, and no devotee would give the dust of their feet. Because if you understand in spiritual etiquette, the feet are the dirtiest part of the body, right? I mean, you walk into a bathroom or something, you walk on a field, you step in something. But if you sit in it, right? If you touch it with your hand, your face goes in it. So it's the feet are. That's why when you go into a temple or something, you wash your feet. They have things. You wash your feet. So when you respect someone, you say their feet because they're so exalted that their feet. But for you to touch your feet to someone who's superior, right? Imagine Prabhupada sat here and you put your foot in his lap. So, no. Everyone was saying no. But we went to the gopis said, yes. And they said, don't you know you'll go to hell if you put your feet on Krishna? They said, yes, let us go to hell, but let Krishna's headache be cured. So that's bhakti. And all these verses are explaining that. Okay. He doesn't want any type. These types of liberations are kind of devotional, but they're with opulences. You get the same planet as God. You get the same opulence as God. But they don't want any liberation. They just want service. So that's the purest bhakti. And therefore, certainly they don't want the type of moksha where you're merging and there's no distinction so you can actually serve. Good, keep on going. Okay. What I'm going to do, well, I think I'll go a little quick just to say what we'll cover, and next week I'll have some other strategy. Prabhupada says, even though from a philosophical perspective there's no difference in the essential nature of the Lord of Sri Krishna and other incarnations, this is Akhila Rasa Mrita Murti. Anyway, I see I don't have enough time to explain that. Just one more verse I'll explain. And the nature of bhakti is there's no prerequisite for it. If you're on the path of jnana, renunciation, you have to be born in a Brahmin family. You know, you have this prerequisite of austerity and so. But bhakti, it's like a mother to a child. Love, there's no prerequisite. You just have to do it. A mother doesn't have to be learned. She doesn't have a PhD. She doesn't have to be renounced. All she has to have is love. So in the path of bhakti, the only qualification is your heart. So here's a verse that says, my dear king, everyone has the right to execute devotional service just as he has the right to take early bath in the month of Magh. Magh is the winter. I've gone to the Kumbh Mela. You've heard of the Kumbh Mela? The Kumbh Mela is the largest festival in the world. It's unbelievable. They build a city for 20 million people on the bank of the three rivers. And every 12 years, I mean, now there's like, on the auspicious day, it's amazing. Like 20 million people, like the population of New York, bathe at one time. It's amazing. So I went to the Kumbh Mela many, many years ago, and it was very, very cold. And I remember waking up in the morning and just like wearing like a blanket. I was sleeping in a tent and going down to the Triveni and, you know, and jumping in. Cold, right in the middle of the winter, really cold. So what they say is anyone can do that. They say only Brahmins can do that. You know, only if you're renounced you can do that. Anyone can do it. So that's the purity of bhakti. The purity of bhakti is there's no prerequisite for it. It's love. You just have to do it. Prabhupada said that the process is simple. The application is difficult. And what does the process is simple mean? The process is simple means anybody can do it. You see little children, right? The Ananta's little family at any age, right? They can do bhakti. You don't have to be learned, scholarly. Anyone can do bhakti. Prabhupada, when he was in 26 Second Avenue, some bum used to come in and he'd open the door during Prabhupada's lectures and he'd bring some toilet paper and put it in the bathroom. And Prabhupada was appreciating, just see. He wasn't in the mode of goodness. There wasn't a qualification of mode. But the application is difficult because it's a qualification of heart. I remember once I was in the Brooklyn Temple and my brother had a house in Park Slope and I went there to see my family at kind of a time where maybe it was a little estranged still a bit. You know, they didn't appreciate it as like they do now. And I showed a slideshow because we didn't have all these iPhones. And there was one picture of just one young boy just paying his respects to Prabhupada. And then my younger brother, spontaneously from his heart, the true mood of a New Yorker came out and he said, I don't bow down to no one. So it's so simple, but can you do it? I remember one time being in the temple and this person came. I was in Vrindavan. and he was a Brahmin family, and he was a yogi, and he was like a master's degree, and he was so educated and so many. And he would sit up and he would chant his rounds with his back straight. And then I remember there was this other devotee there that in one sense, his mind was so disturbed that when he would chant his Gayatri mantra, he would sit in the back of the temple. And practically, I'd go in the temple like 45 minutes later, he was still trying to concentrate on it. And his hands were kind of, because he would sell the Mahaprasad, the food, and it was like. But that guy, I remember, I was so impressed with that guy that sat up so straight and was so disciplined. And then that guy left. The other guy is still around. Why? Because the qualification of heart. The main thing of bhakti actually is to be free from envy. That's the main qualification. That you don't mind that there's something higher than you. And you don't mind bowing down to something higher than you. And anyone can do it. Next, in country, the lower caste people who are considered less than sudras are also initiated. And when they are properly dressed with tilak and beads, they appear coming. In fact, they look very beautiful. They immediately surpass the ordinary Brahmins. And you'll read in the Nectar Devotion, I'll probably start with it next time, that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Prabhupada's guru, fought for this. Because in India, they tend anything, they tended to appropriate spirituality only for people who were born in high families. And his principle was, this is the highest thing. And anyone is eligible to it, if they can be humble. And they even tried to, at one time, there actually was a murder plot against him. And he was one place, and one of his devotees, who was a married person and had white cloth, looked like him. They switched cloth so he could sneak out. But anyway, we'll read that. I just feel we've had... The only thing I'd like to finish is we'll do the 5 minutes of free writing on anything that inspired you today, and just put the pen to the paper, and then we'll finish up for today. Okay? Just keep the pen moving, please. Okay? Whatever inspired you today, whatever points you remembered. Okay, everyone look up. Just underline one thing that you wrote that was kind of struck you the most. Okay. All right. Now, somehow break into groups of two or three and discuss it among yourselves. Not more than two or three. Each discuss with him and share your points. Can you just look up for a second? Haribo? We'll just... Okay, it was nice. I went around and I saw that people were getting different points, understanding a little bit about pure devotional service, what are the challenges, what are the inspirations. Next week, chapters 6 to 9, okay? And it's the principles of devotional service we're going to be covering. There's 64 practices, and we'll just go through the different practices of devotional service. And obviously won't cover them all. Therefore, it's not that much to read either, because it's just listing the different practices, okay? We'll discuss them next week. Thank you all for coming. That was great.